I had to lower my standards of how I thought it was okay to treat gay people and people of color. And that's the truth. Like, I was like, if I'm going to be an active Mormon, I have to be okay with racism to an extent. If I'm going to be a Mormon, I have to be okay with homophobia to an extent and transphobia to an extent.
I agree completely.
It's more than a podcast. They're more than best friends. It's more than an hour of laughing and crying and then going back to laughing again. It's more than a podcast. They're more than ex-Mormons.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to More Than Mormon. I'm Lena.
And I'm Meg, and I'm a little
We're
tipsy.
I'm catching up. I just made my drink.
What are you
So I'm
drinking?
the same thing that I drank the last time we recorded, actually. I don't know why. I was even gonna make something completely different, but this is like my default.
This is your like podcast drink. Cool. I'm having a peach Bellini that I bought at Aldi, and it was a great decision. Lena just told me they don't have Aldi in Utah.
No. Utah sucks for a lot of reasons, but not having an Aldi is definitely one of them.
It's definitely up there. And
I
also, the
shop at
last time
Aldi
I
all the
was
time as a
there,
missionary.
I was like, "Can we go to Dunkin' Donuts?" And Isaac was like, "Oh, we don't have those here." And I was like, "What do you guys have?" And you're like, "I don't know, random coffee places that are like, they just, I think there's Starbucks there, right?"
Yep, unlike
Yeah,
every corner. It's
Starbucks
great.
is just, it's not my jam because I'm a Dunkin' girl, but it'll do in a pinch.
I can't say that I've ever actually had Dunkin' coffee. I've
Well,
had
let me save.
Einstein's.
Einstein's is all right. Let me save
Pretty good, but I feel like it's too bitter still.
all of our listeners. I'm about to drop a big piece of advice on you. Dunkin' Donuts ha if you're a Dunkin' Donuts person, Dunkin' Donuts has a new smoked vanilla syrup. So you can get like a smoked vanilla latte or a smoked vanilla iced latte. I mean, I don't know. I think there's like a smoked vanilla cold brew. I have tried the smoked vanilla cold brew and the smoked vanilla iced latte, and they're both gross. And I have regretted it both times. I got the cold brew first, and I was like, I'm more of a latte person anyway. So then I got the latte, and it was just like, it just get regular vanilla. Like the smoked vanilla tastes like burnt vanilla. Get
Like,
the
why would you want
regular.
that?
Yeah, and they have regular, and I think they also have sugar-free vanilla. Like, why are we adding more vanillas? Why can't we get like a chocolate latte? Like,
Isn't that mocha?
yeah, I guess. But I think
Did they
mocha,
have a
I
mocha
don't.
latte?
Yes, they do. Their caramel craze latte, no whip, is like one of my go-tos. I also get their caramel macchiato a lot, iced. But that's like when I'm feeling fancy, because that's like a $4 drink, the macchiato.
You know, anywhere I go, I look for something that's white chocolate, and I prefer iced coffee.
I don't like white chocolate ever in any form, but
I
especially
prefer white chocolate.
over what? Regular chocolate? I
But I'll
think
be
this might be the
honest with
last
you.
episode of the podcast. Like, I don't know if we can work together
I would
anymore.
not pick like white chocolate chips to go on ice cream, for example. That's not like,
Who would do that? That's
so
garbage.
I don't go that route. However, when it comes to coffee flavoring, I like the white chocolate because it's a little less bittery. And I do like white chocolate raspberry creamer. Delicious.
White
So
chocolate is
good.
not my jam. I don't know. I don't know what there was like a turning point in my life where I just was like, I don't like white chocolate. I'm
You
gonna
became
stop eating
mature and
it.
now you like dark chocolate now, don't you?
I mean, I've always liked dark chocolate. I've always liked dark chocolate, but yeah, milk chocolate or dark chocolate, somewhere in between. I'm not a white chocolate person. Like, if there's ever an option between something white chocolate-ish or something that has no white chocolate, like, I'll go no white chocolate every time.
So my favorite candy is white chocolate peppermint bark, and I think that might be why.
See, and that, I would say when it's the holidays and I open, like, a holiday treat box, that's the last thing I want to see. Like, I'm like, really, see, this is damn. Just crushed up candy cane mixed with the worst kind of fake chocolate. Like,
okay, just... so you guys, do I have the unpopular opinion? Is white chocolate good?
People must.
Am I the only one who thinks that?
Because Starbucks always has their, like, white chocolate mocha, whatever. Like, for the holidays, every holiday I get white chocolate bark and I throw it away. I'll start saving it for you since you like it. Like, I don't like it, and maybe I have the unpopular, excuse me, opinion. I don't know.
Well, I would like to know.
Please tell us. Would you rather... I'm sorry if you came here for, like, important religious discussion. Dark chocolate or white
chocolate? Because I feel like most people...
Well, there's also say milk that milk chocolate
is pretty good. But there's... I feel like if you had... Because I feel like there's a lot of people who only prefer dark chocolate. And then there's a lot of people who don't really have much of a preference and kind of, like, you know, a little bit of all. I will have some stuff that's dark chocolate. I just... The only time I really want sweets is if I'm on my period. Or if I'm really freaking high.
See, and I would put dark chocolate as number one, like, just above milk chocolate, which I also really love. And then, like, deep, deep, deep beneath that is white chocolate. Like, I not
deep,
only do...
Deep, deep beneath that. Deep, not only like do... the buried plates. Deep.
Yeah. Deep, like the doctrine that they're trying to hide.
Deep, like the doctrine.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess let us know.
Like, you know, 6 minutes of talking about coffee and chocolate is probably enough for you guys. But I actually love how this can easily connect with a conference clip that literally makes
me... I'm trying so hard to figure out where this segue is going.
Just wait. I see it and it almost makes me cry of laughter. So let me see if I can manage the screen share. I wasn't lucky last time, but I think I will be this time.
Is this the and coffee? At the moment,
yes, it is.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. This makes me tear up because when I watch other people tear up, like, I tear up, but then it makes me laugh. And again, God. I'm a little tipsy right now, so, like, who knows how much tearing up could happen. Like, this could take a turn, but I'm excited because it is so fucking funny.
My next story is about a woman I'll call Mary. She was the daughter of faithful pioneer parents.
Already looking at her face is like too much for me.
Because you're about to cry?
I don't know. It's like, I feel so... Part of it is, I feel like this woman is clearly, like, so brainwashed. She doesn't even recognize the insanity. She absolutely
believes what she's about to say.
Yes.
She absolutely believes it.
I feel bad for her, and I also think that she is batshit crazy. And it just makes me laugh. It makes me cry. Like, there's so many emotions.
I know.
And I'm 1.5 peach Bellinis in. So, like... Just let it go. Well, let's just...
I'm on my period, so let's go.
So you've come... If you are also on your period and or drinking, like...
And you're just this having is the a really emotional...
If you're Hold on, folks. If you're in a
rational
space... It's going to be a
rough one. It's going to be a doozy.
Mentally right now.
This may actually be a great episode.
Yeah.
Just saying.
We'll see. I guess we'll find out. I'll find out when I edit this. And I'm like, God, she was drunk. Meaning me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
She'd been married in the temple and was the mother of 10 children. She was a talented woman who taught her children how to pray, to work hard, and to love each other. She paid her tithing and the family rode to a church together on Sunday in their wagon.
Aw, their little wagon.
Though she knew it was contrary to the word of wisdom, she developed the habit of drinking coffee and kept a coffee pot on the back of her stove.
Though she knew it was contrary to the word of wisdom, makes it sound like she woke up every morning and was like, fuck you, God, I'm making coffee today. Instead of just like a normal person who likes something and who's choosing, yep. like they drink it, it gives them energy, it makes them feel good, it tastes good, it provides them comfort, whatever it may be, that they are just like enjoying something that comes from the earth. That is delicious and has benefits. And instead of that, she's like, although she knew that God would be pissed the fuck off,
she still kept it on display for everyone to see when they entered her kitchen.
It's her home.
Yeah, she can put it wherever the fuck she wants.
Is she supposed to, would you rather her like hide it? I don't like, what is this trying to say? Like, if you're gonna be breaking the word of wisdom, like at least keep that shit like in the back of the pantry. Because I feel like that's also like, Isn't lying about a sin just a double sin?
I'd say so. But like, if you ask the church, who makes their members basically covenant to like lie for the Lord, so to speak, mm-hmm. the answer would be no.
My kids at work are super into Connect Four. And, you know, you can get Connect Four in a situation where like the other person, like no matter where they go, you're going to win. And my kids will do this and they'll just start screaming like, double trick. And I feel like sinning and lying about it is like the ultimate like double trick. And so I guess double trick. Or maybe sinning and not lying about it is the ultimate double trick because this lady's pissed about it.
She just, yeah. Well, honestly, I don't think there's a way you can win.
You're going to piss
someone off regardless of what you do. Either they were sinning and they were hiding it, or they were sinning and everyone could see it and they just thought it was fine. No matter how you do it, you're going to piss people off.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess the moral of this story is like, leave the church and sin in peace.
Yep. I mean, honestly, isn't that what we all want at the end of the day? Just a little bit of fucking privacy.
Like this poor woman just liked coffee, and now in general conference, they're like,
what if she had horrible IBS and coffee was the only way she could take a shit? Can you imagine never being able to poop? Come on.
I mean, yes, because I also have IBS, but like.
Oh God, I love Drunk Meg. Should we continue?
I was reading, yes we should, but real fast, I was reading in back in my journal recently, and that's one Mormon thing I still do, is I'm a great journaler. I had come home from drinking with friends and I wrote in my journal like, alcohol is amazing, I can't believe Daddy God outlawed this. I wrote that in my journal. In like the end, like the tail end of my
Daddy
consciousness,
God,
I was like,
I
this
cannot.
Needs to be documented.
You're like, this is proof right here for the record, my friends.
Like, if your testimony of the church could be based on your feelings, then like my testimony of alcohol was fully based on my feelings that moment.
Oh,
love,
yeah.
Joy, peace. You know,
that's
the scripture.
How I felt in Vegas walking around in a see-through crop top with no bra with a peach Bellini that was basically my size because I am very short. Uh-huh. And I was drunk as a skunk and I felt free as a feather and it was amazing.
Yeah. Like, and now can
and
you
guess
imagine?
What? We didn't get into any trouble. We didn't turn into alcoholics. I came home. I continued to do my job just fine. It was fun as fuck to go and let loose and then come back to reality like a normal adult.
Now let's imagine that like this general conference, one of the people you served your mission with is for some reason speaking and they're like, I know this girl who not only drinks, but posts about it on Facebook and then weeps in front of millions of people. I mean, essentially.
Yep.
Because you've chosen as an adult to do something that's fully legal and fully acceptable. There's nothing medically wrong with it. There's nothing morally wrong with it. Like, it's just, and that's what this woman is doing, but about coffee.
About coffee. Like, yep. Wait for it, you guys.
Roll the clip.
Wait for it.
She claimed that the Lord will not keep me out of heaven for a little cup of coffee, but because of that little cup of coffee, she could not qualify for temple recommend, and neither could those of her children who drank coffee with her. She lived to a good old age, and she did eventually qualify to re-enter and serve in the temple. But only one of her 10 children had a worthy temple marriage, and a great number of her posterity, which is now in its fifth generation, live outside of the blessings of the restored gospel she believed in and her forefathers sacrificed so much for.
Okay. Okay. I'm trying to, like, my reactions was me trying to react the way that I think that lady anticipated people reacting, right? Like, she's like, wait for this bombshell, five generations later, and they're still outside of the church. But it's like,
I...
what are we supposed to do in this situation? Like, she's weeping because a woman was drinking coffee.
She is distraught. And then blaming this woman
for five generations worth of other people's
individual
choices.
People decided to do with their life.
Yep.
Because of coffee. And the church views apostates as like criminals of some kind. So mm-hmm. of course, making her out to be the ultimate villain is the best way. Which is so against what the church is supposed to teach in their doctrine, saying that, like, I just had a brain fart. Never mind.
Well, isn't it? It's just so crazy because in this talk, like, rather than being like, you know what, this woman made a mistake that, like, really impacted the direction of her posterity. However, like, she was able to come back into the fold, and because of the atonement, because of repentance, like, it's as if none of that ever happened, because, like, that's what the atonement is
supposed to be for. Yep.
But instead, it's like, it doesn't matter that she came back to the church. It doesn't matter that she came back, whatever. Like, we're still talking in conference about this woman's mistakes however many years ago. Like, she she'll never be able to make up for the horror that she did. But again, it's like, why is this woman responsible for five generations worth of other people's choices? And why is the atonement of Jesus Christ not enough to cover her drinking coffee?
Yep.
Of all of the things. Like,
yep.
So, and we're shaming her at General Conference.
I was just about to say, and you're literally shaming her in front of millions of people, and now it's online for the entire world to see. And I was giggling. I can't help it, because now that I am on the side that I'm on, it's absolutely ridiculous, and it's really funny, because once you've broken everything down, you can realize that, of course, coffee isn't going to keep you out of heaven. Of course, coffee is not going to make you unlovable.
And even unworthy. If it does, like, do you really want to be with a heavenly father that's, like, counting every cup of coffee you've had?
For because real.
That would make me feel like shit. Like, if every time I went over to my mom's house, she was like, remember when you were 9 years old and you lied to me about getting detention? Like, yep. I would be like, Mom, it's been, like, 20 years. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just,
you're like, stop.
Why are you still holding this
up? Why are you still, like, bringing it up?
Well, I let you into my home. Like, I forgive you to an extent. Yep. But yep. at the same time, it's like, just let it go. Like, it's one tiny thing. And I get this woman, the point of this woman's story is, like, you may make small mistakes, think it's no big deal, and it'll have these lasting impacts. And on the surface, that's a fine
lesson topic to teach.
Yeah, like, that's fine. But the way that she can goes about
be true.
It, and it can
the
be
way
true.
She goes about it is so shameful.
Yeah.
Is so guilt trip, gaslighty, mm-hmm. manipulative. Yeah.
She's shaming this woman, and she's attempting to scare people into obeying the church's commandments. And they're not God's commandments. They're the church's, because they didn't come from God. They came from fucking Doctrine and Covenants, which was written by Joseph Smith and other influences.
Yep. Yep.
So, like, It's so stupid. And once again, with the word of wisdom, why are Mormons so hung the fuck up on coffee?
Coffee.
And they eat meat for 2, sometimes 3, sometimes more meals a day. And the word of wisdom says to eat meat sparingly, which is actually really good advice for your physical health and for the health of our planet. Yep. Like,
yep.
And we just are like, no.
I don't sip a know coffee. For sure if this is true. We're going to have to take a look. But from my understanding, the church has a lot of stock in like McDonald's and all of those other companies. And I know for a fact that this is something that can be, proven, is that the meat industry is one of the things that is depleting our planet the most.
Yes.
And eat meat sparingly. If you're going to say that Joseph Smith was inspired to give the word of wisdom, then y'all should really be hammering the head on eat meat sparingly.
I think,
but they don't care because the earth is supposed to blow up and turn into a giant crystal.
Which, yeah, animal agriculture contributes an insane amount to greenhouse gases annually. Yep. And if we reduce animal agriculture and replaced it with regular agriculture, it would reduce the amount of land that we're using for animal yep. agriculture. It would reduce the amount of water that we need to grow and harvest things. It's just, we'll link things, because neither of us are experts on this.
No.
But it is one of those things where if you care about the planet, you are alarmed by climate change and you don't think it's just how it's supposed to be. It's just part of the last days. If you care about the planet, whether you think God made it for you or not, if you care about the generations that are coming after us, and not like down the line, like the next generation,
like the children that y'all are having right now.
Correct. Like if you care about those things and you look up ways to, as an individual, contribute to reducing climate change, like one of the very first things that you will see is to switch to a plant-based diet as much as possible.
As much as possible.
Or yeah. In the words of Joseph Smith, to eat meat sparingly.
Yep.
Like, and the
and by eating fruit and vegetables that are in season, not that is healthy for a lot of reasons too. It limits and you're gonna have to cut this out because my brain is just like stalling, but I'm just thinking of like, it takes a lot of money and some synthetic chemicals in order to produce fruits and vegetables that are not naturally, mm-hmm. blooming at certain times of the year, and
right.
us in America, we throw out everything. Locally,
they have to be shipped
exactly.
Internationally. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the word of wisdom is absolutely a part of, that behavior control. And clearly it is used as emotional manipulation as well, as we saw in that General Conference clip. And General Conference as a whole is emotional manipulation and control, because
even leading up to it, they set the expectation that you should be preparing yep, for. You get yep. that little bookmark in Relief Society that's like, come with a question and pray about it and bring your journal and also bring a meal to share.
And everybody and, like, stands up in reverence, and everybody, and like, even if they're at home, they're still sustaining. Oh, yeah. It is this huge deal.
And
they say that scripture, it's something right. that you're going to study for the next 6 months of your life. If you're, a really active member, like that, because that's what they tell you to do.
Well, and they combine it with this like emotional like tie that becomes like nostalgic and comforting for people, where you like get together with your family and every family yeah. has different traditions. And you
they always have mission reunions most of the time in Utah. Mm-hmm. Every conference weekend, because a ton of people are going to be in town anyway. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And as a member, I really liked General Conference because you didn't have to go to church. You could watch it in your pajamas.
I loved it because I got to take naps.
I even feel like as a student at BYU Idaho, like the week before conference, like a lot of the teachers I had would give like less homework, or they would kind of be like, you know, focus on conference this weekend. You know what I mean? Like it was just like a little tiny break from the monotony that is sacrament meeting and then Sunday school and then Relief Society and then chit chat and then you know, like the same shit all the time. And not that conference is ever super original, although you do get some fun ones like this lady from time to time, but like the change it up and to watch with your friends or your family, like there's so much emotion into this, and the speakers have emotion,
and if you have any sort of thing in your life that is bothering you, something you've been thinking a lot about, something you really want or need that hasn't came yet, you're going to go with those things in mind, expecting that the Lord will speak to you in some way and let you know where those blessings are in the timeline of your life. You know, like Elder Holland, like some blessings come soon, some come late, some don't come until heaven. But for all of those who are obedient or whatever he says, I'm totally, you know, not saying it, obviously, but he's like, but for those of you who are obedient to the gospel, those blessings will come. And so it's kind of like this, you know, they keep you hanging on.
From like, oh, I want to be with my spouse who's dying of cancer, or I really want a new job or a new car, or I, you know, anything, it could be anything. And suddenly it's like, just for you, like revelation, exactly what you needed to hear. There's a really fantastic video on YouTube that we can link where this guy talks about how, like, not Mormon music, but like contemporary Christian worship music, how it's like designed perfectly to like trigger all of the psychological things it needs to in order to essentially become like addictive for your brain and your body, and to like fuel this testimony because of the kinds of noises it uses, the repetition it uses, the atmosphere that it creates, like those kinds of things. It's really interesting. And the Mormon church does that in a different way, in that it creates the perfect environment for you to feel like God is speaking to you, when in fact they've invited 16 million of their closest friends. And they're, in theory, speaking not just to the church, but to the world. And they're just spitting out whatever the fuck they want to spit out that time.
So, fun fact, the church uses something called heart cell, and it is exactly what you're talking about. It is a whole entire like group of people that puts together things like He is the Gift.
Yes.
And it is designed to...
I still get the Light the World, not the Light the World. Yeah, Light the World, the song in my head.
My brain remembers what it was like to watch that the first time and feel the spirit and like feel the love. And I literally, even though I absolutely 1,000,000,000% am positive that it's not true, I could go back to that instantly. Mm-hmm. And the thing that a lot of people do not realize is like, this is just a normal chemical response that happens in our brain. And it happens with a bunch of things. It's not related to the spirit. It's not related to something specific because everyone is different, you know, but if something is bringing you, you know, those euphoric feelings, those are chemicals in the brain. And so this is from Bonneville Communications, which we know the church uses. They say it loud and proud every general conference.
And can we, like, this, just to kind of illustrate your point, like, this happens to me when I watch that commercial where the guy saves all the gum wrappers and draws little cartoons and then uses them to propose to his girlfriend.
Yes.
And that's a commercial for gum. And I get, like, chills and tingles because, like, the music, and it's so sweet and so cute, and it kind of, like,
and the little slowly message unravels. Hope. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's, like, it's, even talking about it, I'm like, oh, my God, I just love that. Commercial. Yep. Like it's literally advertising. And that's what the church is doing when it puts out these massive campaigns. It's advertisement for its members and its non-members and its investigators. Like
this is actually where people's tithing and welfare funds are going. So this is straight from Bonneville.com. So it says that Bonneville Communications, our ability to touch the hearts and minds of audiences, makes us an essential resource for organizations with vital messages. For more than 30 years, our creative professionals have designed public service and direct response messages for national nonprofit organizations, such as the Huntsman Cancer Institute, Mormon-owned, Boy Scouts of America, National Hospice Foundation, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and the Salvation Army. Our unique strength is the ability to touch the hearts and minds of our audience, evoking first feeling, then thought, and finally action. We call this uniquely powerful brand of creative heart sell, strategic emotional advertising that stimulates response. Our people not only create effective messages, we get them out effectively. We maintain an ongoing public service relationship with more than 11,000 radio and TV stations and networks, and cable networks and systems in North America alone. We distribute public service and paid media campaigns directly from our offices in Salt Lake City. We provide an all pre-production, production, and post-production services, as well as state-of-the-art special effects and post-production facilities, closed captioning, electronic tagging, and video audio duplication. We are an advertising agency engaged in communications for quality life. Our people are driven by the belief that advertising can and should be a powerful, positive influence on the values and lives of people.
So even in that paragraph, I mean, it answers all of our questions, which is that it's a advertising company that works with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to create content that is intentionally designed to use all those things that you learn about in your like freshman 101 English class, those ethos and those pathos
exactly. And those logos.
It taps on all of those in a systematic way. And just like the video I was talking about, which is talking about, you know, music specifically, like not only does it use music, it uses images, it uses all these different things. It makes me think of when the church recently changed their logo, and you and I and plenty of other people were like, why does this look so Catholic? Like, think about for a
because
second.
Because the Catholic Church has done such a good job of capitalizing on this image of Jesus Christ. And usually that image is either him on a cross or him independently with, you know, marks on his hands, his arms are open. Look at the Christus statue that the church loves to say is like this huge deal, as if they freaking came up with it themselves.
Yep. On Wikipedia, it says that Bonneville International Corporation is a media and broadcasting company wholly owned by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Well, there you have it,
folks. Through its for-profit arm, Deseret Management Corporation. Oh, the for-profit arm.
So many for-profits sitting underneath their non-profit umbrella. It's a little ridiculous. That's definitely a topic for another time. But I do too.
It wasn't a lot, but every time I read shit like this, I'm like, can I just have that back? Like,
it's like, and you purposely manipulated
the
me.
Church, and I think there's even still current lawsuits.
I actually read something not too long ago that said that there actually may be a case, like within this week that I read, that one of the people who sued may actually have a case.
Which I'm sure, I mean, I know the church has filled with lawyers. I mean, that's what that whole fucking giant building is next to Temple Square.
Yep.
So I'm sure that they think about this, and there's layers and layers to it. But as an individual, like my branch president, my stake president, whatever, my missionaries who speak for the church, you know, they told me what my tithing would be used for, what my fast offerings would be used for. And it's not true. So it's upsetting as an individual who worked to earn money and who willingly gave that under this sort of like preconceived idea of what that money would be used for that I didn't come up with. Like the people who were called by the church told that information to me. And then to now it's just like, and it's silly to be like, well, I should have Googled it before. But we'll get into the BITE model, the information control, the emotional control. I was going to say the educational control, but that's kind of similar with both.
Yeah.
It's this like,
because they do say that you know, going anywhere for information for the church outside of church resources is guaranteed dangerous. To lead you astray, and it's mm-hmm. dangerous, and they really beat that into you. And so, yeah, absolutely, they control your education, not to mention the encouragement of cheap college tuition to go to BYU, you know, encouraging women and men to get married young, and the retention rate of women versus men at church education schools is sad because they
disproportionate.
Yep, disproportionate. So yeah, education control, you know, but like when the missionaries come into your home, you know, you go to the MTC and you are taught how to teach. And so when they come into your home, they are quiet, they're reverent, they're dressed in nice clothing, they tell you they're volunteers. For Meg and I, they were our age, and so that was a little bit more relatable. And that, you know, they control the information not only by, you know, coming into your home and saying, you know, here's the restoration, here's how it happened, here's the translation, whatever. But they too will say, you know, as you learn and as you study, you're going to run into a lot of opposition. And that's Satan, because Satan knows that you're ready, and Satan sees that you're making strides to get closer to God, and he's going to do anything in his power to stop that from happening. And so anybody who is trusting the missionaries is going to be like, oh, you know what? Maybe I should ask the missionaries about X, Y, and Z instead of going to YouTube or Google.
Yeah, we would tell people. There was one woman, I taught her in an area for a while, and then I left. But a friend of mine served in that area right after me and taught this woman and baptized her. Well, she didn't baptize her because she doesn't have the priesthood, but, you know, somebody baptized her.
She has a vagina, so, you know.
Yeah, somebody with a penis baptized her, so don't worry, it's legit. But it's legit. I remember her telling me about this, the missionary, and she was like, yeah, it was crazy because on the day she was supposed to be baptized, there was like tornado warnings and the power went out at the church, and it was like all this crazy stuff happening. And we could just tell that like Satan was trying so hard to prevent this woman from being baptized, and she like pushed through and she was like, I don't care, I want to be baptized. And at the time I was like, wow, that's a really inspiring story. Like, that's really cool that she was like so committed to do it. But now it's like, if the power's out and there's tornado warnings in Arkansas, where you should actually take tornado warnings seriously, like, why are we still like, this is just Satan? Like, just fucking reschedule it. Like, it just was one of those things where I, even at the time, I was like, that's really intense. Like, good for her. I'm glad she got what she wanted from that situation, that she got, she wanted to get baptized and she got baptized. But also it's like, there are, you know, there's members driving in that tornado who are like, we have to support the new member. Like, we have to be at her baptism.
Because
like,
with it's their a member's kids in job to fellowship and love bomb and the offer you literally there, everything like, they have. Yep. Instead it's a of, huge thing.
Instead of being like, oh, there's a tornado warning like there is every 20 minutes in Arkansas, like, we'll just reschedule. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll do it next weekend. We'll do it on a Tuesday. Doesn't fucking matter, because like, what should matter is people's immediate safety. But it doesn't. Because if you have an opportunity to build your testimony or someone else's, especially as a missionary, like, you have, we've talked about this before, you feel this invincibility where you're like, yeah, tornado, that's Satan. Instead of like, no, that's a tornado. Like,
that's just not the way the world works. That's God, it's either God or Satan. God or you Satan. You aren't in control of your successes. And depending on where you are in the church, if you're faithful, Satan is the one to blame for all the things that go wrong, unless
it's a trial that God allows.
Unless
you.
It's a trial. Yeah. And so it's either God or Satan, and you are basically just tossed like a little rag doll back and forth mm-hmm. between God and Satan. And you never really know what's happening. And I feel like this whole entire concept led to a lot of anxiety. And for me, I developed religious scrupulosity. I think I mentioned that OCD, panic disorder. And I believe that it was masked because of the way the church talks about the Holy Ghost and what the Spirit is supposed to do. You know, you hear stories all the time of like, I was driving this way and I had a feeling that I needed to turn and I didn't do it, and I got into an accident, and had I have made the other turn, I would have been okay. Or
I once had a spiritual experience that I'm pretty sure I shared in like Relief Society or something, that was like, I felt like I should wear tennis shoes to work, but I didn't. I wore sandals, and then a child stepped on my toenail and like ripped it off, and it was painful and gross. And I was like, I just should have listened to the spirit. Like, the spirit was trying to protect me. And, like, meanwhile, God cares about all like, just the little things. Just wear closed-toed shoes. Instead of, yeah. The spirit's like, the Nikes. As if I can afford Nikes. But it was one of those things where, again, now I work with children. If someone's running at me, the first thing I do is move my toes, because they have no awareness of the people around them. But it is one of those things where, like, yeah, if bad things happen, it can be hard, but it becomes easier certainly the longer you've been in the church, and the stronger you're trying to make your testimony. This sort of like, it's just like a default way of thinking. When something bad happens, it's both Satan is trying to do this to destroy me. God is allowing him to do this to me so that I can overcome it. I can learn something. I can grow. And next time the spirit tells me to do something, I'll remember my toenail getting ripped off. And instead of God just like having me move my foot
so that I didn't get my toenail ripped off. Well, and that's the other thing too, is they're like, you know, if you listen to the spirit when the spirit tells you to do like these little things that don't really matter, the spirit will trust you with the big promptings later on.
And I think, I mean, we've already began talking about it, but like, let's jump into information control.
Hold on one second. Oh, God, can we talk about patriarchal blessings?
I don't have mine.
In terms of emotional control, I don't actually know if mine is in here. My patriarchal blessing is probably the thing that kept me in the church and probably the biggest thing that helped me leave.
Patriarchal blessings are crazy while you look for it.
Yeah, tell everyone what it is while I see if I can find it.
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with a patriarchal blessing, essentially, I don't know the logistics of it, but there's a man who is called at some point the stake that he covers, to act as the stake patriarch. This is a calling they hold for life. And I think the most notable thing that they do in this role, actually, I'm not sure what else they do, except for I think they go to like, you know, if there's like a temple opening or like a big important, they'll speak at conferences, whatever. But outside of that, I think the biggest thing they do is they give the patriarchal blessing, which is a blessing given to you directly from Heavenly Father through the stake patriarch that is meant to be like the end all be all of blessings for your life. And it can tell you anything. It can be two paragraphs that says, you know, you are faithful and you're valiant and your testimony will touch people, and you will, you know, if you keep the commandments, you'll be able to stand at the resurrection day dressed in white with your family. And it can be that, or it can be really specific. I've heard of people saying really, really specific things about them. Mine was pretty generic. It was, and also the only thing I cared about when I was getting my patriarchal blessing, I was like, Heavenly Father, I want you to tell me what you want me to know, but more than anything, I want to know if I'm going to get married and have babies. Which I think, I hope that that's a relatable experience, because I don't want to be like a freak. But
just you wait. I can't find mine, but yes, that is a very relatable experience.
Yeah, and my patriarchal blessing did say that, I could probably say it almost word for word. It was like, you know, when the time comes to choose a helpmate, the Lord will guide you in choosing a man who will, I don't know, raise a, like, together you will like raise up leaders in the Lord's church, and you will usher them into this earth life, and you will provide a home for them that is safe from the world. And I specifically remember it saying that I would raise like leaders in the church. And that was really important to me, because as a convert, I felt so small. And so the idea that Heavenly Father had this plan for me that involved not only another person and my spouse, but also like these children he was going to trust me to have, and then that those children would be leaders and they would influence other people, like it was really like uplifting and inspiring and motivational to read this and all of these blessings and all the other blessings. Mine was like pretty long. It was like 2 pages. You know, all these other blessings were all contingent upon like, if you are faithful, if you are obedient, you know, if you are attending your Sunday school meetings, if you are taking the sacrament, if you're keeping the commandments, then it's all this and more. And I would agree that it had a really big influence on me avoiding giving into this like temptation to escape this information control and like really do my own research and really like allow myself to feel what I was trying not to feel. And it was because I really wanted not just to be married and have kids, but like I wanted to have a spouse who would love me and support me. And I wanted to have children in a home that was like safe and happy. And of course I did, because I love my parents, but like I have divorced parents. I have a brother that I'm not very close to. Like, you know, I grew up really desiring to have that like nuclear family unit, and joining the church, a big part of that for me was recognizing that that was something I wanted. Because before I joined the church, it was like, I could see myself getting married. I don't really care about getting married. I'd like to have kids, but it's not a big deal. In the church, it was like, my only source of happiness is like first Jesus and then getting married and having kids.
Yep.
So I didn't want to do anything that would make it acceptable for God to take those away from me. Whoever my spouse was and whoever my children were, I felt like they were like right around the corner. And if I could just keep doubting my doubts long enough, like they would be there. And I feel like you could listen to this as an active Mormon and be like, yeah, that's exactly what would have happened. But the price of me staying in the church was compromising my own morals and my own standard of how it is acceptable and unacceptable to treat people. And staying in the church as long as I did, I had to lower my standards of how I thought it was okay to treat gay people and people of color. And that's the truth. Like, I was like, if I'm going to be an active Mormon, I have to be okay with racism to an extent. If I'm going to be a Mormon, I have to be okay with homophobia to an extent and transphobia to an extent.
Yep.
And it was like this teetering thing of like, am I going to be, this is why we talk about like progressive Mormons are just like almost ex-Mormons, because you're tipping on that. I care about people, all people, like marginalized or not. I just care about people. I want people to be treated well, especially by big bully organizations like the church that claims to be true, whatever. My patriarchal blessing was pulling me back to being like, okay, I know you care about gay people. I know that you have witnessed firsthand how your friends who are gay have been harmed to the point of inflicting harm on themselves because of what the church teaches. But don't you really want to have this happy, beautiful family that God has like promised you is yours? And I did want that. I wanted that so bad. And it like just had to get to the point where I was like, you know what? If I never get that, but I'm following my own moral compass and I'm not supporting an organization that has in the past and continues to harm marginalized groups of people, especially LGBTQ plus youth, children, then that's okay. Like, that just has to be okay. I can just let it go and trust that it's more important to be a good person and to stand up for what is right than to earn all these blessings that God has promised me.
Yep. Yep. I agree completely. And for me, you know, it was a really emotional experience. My mom was there. She wasn't a member. A couple of my friends were there.
Really? I went by myself.
I was encouraged to have someone there, and because I was a convert, everyone was like, you poor thing, you should see if you can bring a friend.
Yeah, I could see that. It's like when I went through the temple, I felt that. It was like a lot of like, well, who's going to go with you? I mean, my mom did go with me, but you know, it was like everyone wants to be it's a part almost of that. Like a same pity. With the baptism. It's yep. like everybody wants to do what they can to support you instead of like, do you want me there?
Because if they're there to support you when you're doing something for the church, then they feel like they can maybe cash in on some of those blessings. Like, oh, I helped so-and-so, you know?
Yep.
So I fasted. I was told, you know, pray about some things that you want to know. Pray about some things that are on your mind. And I wanted to know, do I get married? Do I have kids? And I was very specific in my prayer. I don't want to know if I have kids. I want to know if I get pregnant and give birth.
Oh.
And if I should go on a mission, because I've always felt that I would have an issue having kids. I've just always had this feeling.
Really?
Yep. And at the time, I had no way of knowing whether or not that was just like a feeling or like my intuition. My patriarchal blessing was 2 pages front and back. So it's really long.
That is really long.
And I had a pretty good understanding of what they were before I went. And I really wish that I could remember the conversation I had with the patriarch, because I feel like I didn't mention the things I was praying about and the things I was curious about.
Okay. Have you ever watched the Zelf on the Shelf video where they talk about, I think it's Tanner specifically who talks about his patriarchal blessing. And he mm-hmm. mentions like things he like really wanted it to say in there. But then he was like, well, of course this man never met me before. Didn't know me. Like, how would he know to mention those
And then
things?
He sits down and you kind of forget about the casual 30 to 45 minute conversation you have with this guy before the blessing even mm-hmm. gets given. And a lot of the blessings that are in there, if the patriarch feels like giving a specific one, they're just binary gender things that they anticipate everyone to have in the church. I mean, it's pretty common that people will have kids. It's pretty common that people will find someone to marry. It's pretty common that they'll have various church roles, you know?
Well, and there's also this, this understanding, like you were mentioning before with the Alder Holland quote, that's like, well, it's not just for this life, it's for eternity. So if it says you'll get whatever blessing and it doesn't happen
and that was
in this
also
life,
why I was like, I need to make sure that I give physical birth in this life mm-hmm. because I do not want to be told that that is a blessing that I'll get later. That's not something that's okay with me.
Right. If it's just like, you'll become a mother, it's mm-hmm. like, but when, where, how many?
Yep. Exactly.
Vaginally, so, cesarean, like how we do exactly. this adoption, like what's... Yeah.
So my patriarchal blessing
specifics that hasn't ever been a concern.
Mine was very specific.
Well, I didn't have specific questions. I was just like, will I get married, have kids?
Right.
But I wasn't like, how will my children be conceived? You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't thinking that far ahead.
My little
is how I did a lot of
analytical brain was trying to secure a testimony in something that I felt was like a magic of an 8-ball. You know,
it is taught that it is that almost like a tarot card reading,
yeah,
or you know, anything that's almost mythical in the sense of like, this is for you. It's like Harry Potter, you get your sorting hat, you get your like
exactly
owl, like things are just like they just pull towards you, and that's
cause,
how
yeah, because you figure out which tribe you're from, you figure out your spiritual blessings. So in my blessing, it seemed pretty obvious to me that I was going to serve a mission. And it also seemed, you know, I was confident that I would find someone to marry. And then it said that I would give physical birth to multiple children who in this life would like leave my home and thank me for the kind of mother that I was to them. That basically did me in. It was so specific. It was exactly what I felt like I needed to hear. And it was something I had always wanted. And one of the things that drew me to the church was this entire, you know, eternal family concept. I too came from a divorced family. My brother and I are 10 years apart. You know, my husband has, you know, everyone's really close. Everyone's tight knit. Everyone has like these really fun vacation stories and like growing up and mm-hmm. fighting with each other stories. Yeah. And I felt like my entrance into the Mormon church was like my ticket to that kind of life.
Right. There is a guy
and I held on to that my entire membership.
There's a guy whose name I don't need to tell you because you know who I'm talking about. But I was like really, really convinced that like him and I would wind up together. And part of what really like drew me to him and attracted me to him was like his family, because he has big family, super Mormon, like, you know, all the fun big family things. And when you, even outside of the church, I think there is sort of a cultural longing for that. But especially in the church, when you see it like everywhere around you and everyone has those stories, those experiences, you really start to feel like you need that in order to like feel complete. And
the church also, you know, kind of tells you like, you know, from my experience as a female coming, you know, I joined the church fresh out of an abusive relationship, and you know, the church definitely made the men, you know, look really protective and sweet and loyal, and more or less words they basically told me, like, you know, if you're in the church, you're gonna have a husband like this, you yep. know, and going back to the Emma Joseph depiction in those movies that we saw, you know, it kind of gives everyone this idea of like, you know, what romance should be. Mm-hmm. And you know, we already have an issue with that in society as a whole. As someone who's been married for almost 5 years, I can tell you that it's just two people coming together and living their lives and hopefully supporting each other through the hard times and the growing periods. So this patriarchal blessing really played on my emotions. You know, I got married, was diagnosed with a brain tumor that gave me infertility. And then I also was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is like the number one reason for infertility. I could be wrong on the number one, but it's like high up. Mm-hmm. And so it was like double whammy. So like I have this brain tumor. Oh, by the way, the day it was diagnosed, my husband was laid off from his job. And then I get diagnosed with PCOS, and we're told before I even remove my birth control that we will struggle having children. And we take this sadness to people in the church. And not only did our bishop tell us this, but people that were very close to, we were very close to at the time, also said this very flat out. But they told me that my past sins, even if they were repented of, even before baptism, like, this is just the consequence of my sexual sin. And so it was like, how come God told me that if I was faithful in this blessing, I would have this? And my bishop, who is supposed to be, you know, one of the people over, you know, my little family, is telling me that this is a result of my sin. Like, yeah, you repented and you're forgiven, but that doesn't mean the consequences don't follow. Mm-hmm. And it was really confusing because we were active. We were going to church every Sunday. We were paying our tithing. We were attending all 3 hours, even though we fucking hated it. We, you know, we did everything we could. We had the missionaries over. And, you know, just the realization that the blessing not only may not ever come true, but that it may have been my fault. Mm-hmm. Was the biggest thing on the shelf that just killed me. And the church has really controversial opinions on assisted reproductive technology like IVF and surrogacy. And my husband and I did IVF. We have embryos. Like, we know their gender. You know, if you're a pro-lifer listening, like, we have kids. Mm-hmm. But we can't have them.
Yeah.
And it's not because we were not faithful. It's not because God doesn't love us. It's not because we weren't worthy. It's because I have been dealt a shitty hand when it comes to my reproductive biology. But which that patriarchal blessing fucked with me.
Yeah, which still does. What does that mean? Like, when you're an active member of the church and this experience happens to you, like, you're only left with so many, like, conclusions to draw. And yep. I think the first one has to be like, well, why would God give me this blessing if he knows that that's not true or not possible? And to say that, well, it was possible, but then because of your choices, like, it no longer is just, like, so fucking cruel to think that Heavenly Father, like, really break that name apart. A father from heaven, a perfect dad, would
who supposedly is hanging out with your spirit kids right now.
Right. Who sent you his only son so you could be, like, perfectly forgiven of everything forever, is like, well, I was going to give you kids, but since you were a really slutty teenager, it doesn't matter how hard you believe in Jesus, it's not going to happen for you. Like, but then the church teaches you to essentially, like, shove those thoughts away, put them on your shelf, or shove them deep down inside of you, and to instead say, okay, like, how was this, like, my misunderstanding of what a patriarchal blessing was, or my misunderstanding of how the atonement works, and, like, what exactly forgiveness is. And then in doing those things, like, of course you're left to feel like shit about yourself, and to feel like it's your fault for being a slutty teenager. I don't say slut as, like, a derogatory word, because I don't think there's, I think you should have sex with whoever you want as much as you want, as long as
baby, it's consensual. I am a proud slut, so I am picking up what you are putting down.
Right. But this
sexuality, like, as long as you are consenting, is healthy.
Do your thing.
And it's always good. Do your thing.
Mm-hmm. But when I say slut, I mean that's how, like, the church was viewing you. And
of course, I'm a little whore. Yeah.
This reminds me of, so I didn't grow up Mormon, but went to a lot of different Christian churches as a kid. And one of them is, like, kind of like a mega church, modern contemporary Christian, if you will, but still, like, purity culture, those kinds of things, here in Wisconsin. And I remember going to, like, a Sunday school lesson when I was probably, like, you know, 12 or maybe even a little bit younger, because I don't really remember, like, a lot of the details, but they separated the boys and the girls, and I don't know what the boys learned, but the girls did this skit, and they had these, like, maybe, like, teenager, like, early 20s women running this, and they acted out this little skit. One of them had, like, a baseball hat on and was, like, the boy, and the other one was the girl, and, you know, she, like, handed her wrapped present to this boy, and he, like, ripped pieces off of it, and then he handed it back to her, and it was, like, representative, symbolic of her sexual purity. And then,
which, by the way, folks, virginity is a social construct. It's not actually a thing.
Yeah.
Continue.
So, and I think it was, like, she gave it to this boy, and he ripped it apart, and then this other boy came and didn't want her because her present had paper ripped off of it, or something like that. And then this Jesus character came, and with some scotch tape, he, like, wrapped, you know, like, put the pieces back on and taped it back together. And the conversation was, like, yes, Jesus came and, like, taped it back together. And yes, she eventually found a guy who was, like, willing to take on the burden of accepting her. But at the same time, it was like, but, like, does the present look the same as it did before? Yep. Like, and we're, like, 12s, we're like, no, like, we're literally children having an unsupervised, like, our parents were not there, lesson about, like, our sexual.
Talk about information control.
Yeah.
And this emotional control all in the same. Yeah, no shit.
Because here I still remember this, and I'm 27, and that happened. I was 12 or younger, and it stuck with me in a way that, even outside of, like, Mormonism, I think when I was in high school, when I started, like, having sex with guys, you know, it was like, I felt like I was like, well, I know that I'm doing this, and this guy's, like, ripping off a piece of the paper around my present, but I'm, like, willing to take that hit in this situation, just hope that one day I'll, like, find someone who's, like, willing to take me as I am. Yep. But, like you said, like, this idea of virginity and of purity is a completely, like, a cultural thing and a social construct. And you as an individual can decide when your, what your sexual encounters and experiences look like and how you label them. What is the thing they talk about at BYU? It's like soaking. If you don't move, it doesn't count.
You guys, apparently this is like, it's so big in like Mormondom mythology, if you will, that people do this, that I'm almost convinced that it actually does happen, because I've heard, I have a friend of mine whose brother is a sex therapist, and he has said that he's dealt with clients who shower with their garments on, don't remove one or both pieces when they're trying to have sex. Oh, I know. And so there is a lot of poor education, and it's literally going to have to be a discussion all on its own. This is something I'm really passionate about.
I felt like while I was active in the church, there was no way to have conversations with, until I was like really ready to have conversations about like sex. You know, I had plenty of friends who were married who I like knew were having sex, and I knew it, and they knew it, and they knew that I knew it, you know, kind of thing. But it's just like, you don't
talk about it. That we know they know.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's just like, you don't talk about it, which I think is how it perpetuates these things of like soaking, which, if you're unfamiliar, is when,
oh yeah, that's how I was gonna go. Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with soaking, it's when a male puts his erect penis, I believe, into,
I'm hoping,
how I, whatever,
trying to get it in there soft is just
into,
it's
what
like
I'm
trying
assuming
to shove taco meat back in the taco, you know?
Well, speaking of taco, like, I'm assuming it's like a crunchy shell, like it has to be dry as a desert.
Gentlemen, if you're listening, you cannot go down a water slide without water. Foreplay is important.
It's essential. If you,
it is 100% essential for someone with a vagina to have pleasure and be ready for sex and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If you are not having foreplay, your girlfriend or your wife is not enjoying sex, period.
Next time on More Than Mormon Podcast.
I'm sorry, but sex education telling men about foreplay is important.
It is.
I stand by it.
It is important, and I agree with you.
I stand by it.
The fact that that the sentence, at least Jim Bob Duggar knows that the oven needs to be preheated, just came out of your mouth. In, like, complete seriousness. I just love it. Guys, thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Mormon Podcast. If you made it this far, then you're definitely worthy to enter the Telestial Kingdom. Wait, is that the good one?